Are you interested in the current state of the health industry? Want to know more about nutrition, natural medicine, holistic healthcare, and more? You're in the right place. Welcome to Nutrition Prescription with your host, integrative health and nutrition coach, Angela Atkins. She dishes the dirt on a bunch of health topics with a social consciousness flair. Here's Angela.
Hi, and welcome to Nutrition Prescription. I'm Angela Atkins, and today my guest is Roseanne Zaft. Roseanne is a board-certified holistic health and wellness practitioner and a member of the American Association of Drugless Practitioners. She's been a certified fitness professional for over 17 years. Roseanne works with busy men and women who are looking to find more balance in their lives. She helps her clients find solutions to fitness and food so they have more energy, manage stress better, and learn how to live fit using her one day at a time approach. Whether it's going through a 10-day detox, using pure essential oils, learning about food choices, or incorporating functional weight training, golf, fitness, yoga, Pilates, indoor cycling, or water aerobics, Roseanne creates an approach specific to her client, helping them all the way to find the balance they need. Welcome, Roseanne.
Hey there. Nice to be here today, Angela.
Roseanne, I understand you're going to share with us your story about your addiction to drugs and alcohol and various other things, and what the three steps to recovery are, and how you went about this whole process of detoxifying your body.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I really do like sharing my story with people because you never know who you're going to be able to help with it, and that's why I do share my story. And sometimes it's hard to believe when I'm talking that it's actually me that I'm talking about because there is so much insanity behind it. As you introduced me as a fitness trainer and a health coach and all that, people look at me going, really? You were an alcoholic and a drug addict? And I'm like, yep. Not that I'm proud of it, but yeah, I was all of that in every way, shape, and form. But I quote, unquote, call myself that high-functioning alcoholic and drug addict that no one knew about. I was kind of like the closet duality. So I'll go into more detail of all that. See, Angela, I started drinking. My first drunk, I was 4 years old. I actually, like, asked my mom, you know, I wanted to have beer. I wanted this beer, and I used a little sipper bottle, like a little baby bottle, just like what we have nowadays, you know, our sipper bottles. But she put that beer in my bottle, and I loved it. And I wanted more, and she said I'd have to go downstairs to get the beer. And you see, I was afraid of downstairs and the boogeyman, but I wanted that beer more than anything. And I ran down the steps, got the beer, she put it in my bottle. The next thing I know, the room was spinning, and I'm saying to her, Mom, the room's spinning. And before I know it, I passed out. Well, that was 4 years old. And let me tell you, when I got sober at 44, nothing had changed. I would drink, I would do whatever I could to get alcohol, and the room would spin, and I was a blackout, pass-out drinker. So from 4 to 44, I had a love affair with alcohol. Drugs are part of my story. I'm not going to make this a big drunk log, but I can tell you from the time I was 4, I didn't realize there was alcoholism in my family. I didn't realize my mother actually was an alcoholic because she was very functioning. But my grandmother used to give me Boone's Farm. I don't know if you heard. Remember Boone's Farm Strawberry and Mad Dog and Mogan David Brandy and all that? Well, Grandma and I would go to the grocery store, and I got to pick out my flavor that I would have. And we would share little glasses of brandy or wine every night, so I would go to sleep. And the next day, I would end up sleeping in while Grandma did her chores. My mom did work full-time, and so did my father, and my grandmother was my caretaker. So she also was kind of anesthetizing me with alcohol. I mean, all this seemed quite normal. I went through school, and I went to a Catholic grade school and Catholic high school, but I can tell you I always loved alcohol. Anytime I got a chance to nip at a, a bottle of whiskey as I would be in my house if no one was around. Like, I just did it. Now, so I can go on, as I said, the drunk log, but the point is, I was a very good student. I went to a Catholic girls' school, partied on the weekends, above average, B plus student, president of the sophomore class, on student council, and partying was quite a normal thing. Like, everyone did it, right? I mean, that's what we did. I went away to college. I went to Ohio University, and I lovingly call it Camp OU because it was a big party school. Now, again, I have a good education. I'm an above average student, and I did really well. I was like on the dean's list. But the problem was, when I wasn't at in school, I was drinking and then got turned out into drugs. I found out that if I ate speed, I could drink more and I wouldn't pass out as quick. So that was a good thing for me, that I could drink more and function better. I ended up leaving Ohio University because I actually made my first attempt at suicide. I didn't understand why. My grades were so good. I had friends. I partied hard, but there was something inside me that I just was so unhappy, and I couldn't tell anyone that I was unhappy because everything looked good on the outside. How could I be so unhappy? So I did attempt suicide at 18, and the good news is it didn't work. The bad news is I was full of shame and guilt that I had done this. It wasn't really addressed in my household. We kind of let it go under the rug, like, okay, you're fine now. It's all good.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that attempt you made at suicide?
Sure. It was a Monday night. I can remember it totally, that I had been thinking about it for a while. Like, I thought, I just need to die. I just want to die. And I went uptown, and it was a drink and drown kind of happy hour, and literally you drink for like a couple bucks, and the thought was like, this is a perfect night to do it, and I was really trashed, and I ran home to the dorm, and my roommate was still uptown drinking, and she had a bunch of prescription drugs and some other kind of when I say prescription, pharmaceutical drugs that would make you go like downers, barbiturates, so I just ate a bottle full of pills and immediately blacked out. And she came home and saw the bottle was empty, and she couldn't resuscitate me. So they, took me in and pumped my stomach. So, it probably was more of a cry out for help. I understand now that, if you really want to kill yourself, you'll do it. I thought that would do it, honestly, but, I fortunately, lived through it and realized that, I needed to do something different. So I came home, I went enrolled in a private art school. I was a graphic design major, continued to do well. I was up top in my class as a graphic designer. My father passed away at 20. I was 25 years old. He was very young. He was 63. And that kind of put my alcoholism to a new level. I actually would bring, while he was in the hospital dying of cancer, I would bring a 12-pack into the hospital because I just couldn't deal with the pain of him dying. I didn't know how to deal. I didn't know how to deal with feelings. So, and then when he died, I was so angry at God. I was so, so angry at God that I was like, that's it. And my alcoholism, which I still didn't realize was alcoholism, my drinking went to a new level. So now I'm 25. I graduate from art school. I become a self-employed graphic designer, which was perfect. Perfect to be self-employed when you're an alcoholic, because you drink when you want to drink, you sleep in when you want to sleep in, and then you do your artwork, your work when you want to do it. And because, again, so high functioning, I worked all around town at different ad agencies. I'd come in and was a freelancer, and I got paid pretty well for doing it. In those days, you can say that, but I just found that drinking was just part of the mix. Now I'm 25. By the time I'm 30, I buy a house, and I actually opened a design studio called Rose Graphics. Eventually, and I made a corporation, Rose Advertising. And I had clients like General Electric, Lubrizol, Rockwell International. I had some big heavy hitter accounts, and I started hiring people. So here again, my success keeps elevating. I'm making more money, but I'm drinking. And all my friends are drinking, so I thought it can't be a problem because we're all partying like this. Of course, I felt like crap every day. I mean, I wake up like, and you're so hungover, and your stomach hurts, and your head's pounding. So I'd light up a cigarette, open a can of Diet Pepsi, chug that to take the burn out, you know, and then hit some coffee so I can like come to. And I actually even would go to the gym and work out, so to sweat out all those toxins. I intuitively knew I needed to exercise to get this stuff out. And I go to work. I did my job. I met with clients. I had my staff. And at night, I would sit there with, I would start with like maybe a four pack of wine coolers or a bottle of wine or a six pack of beer. And as I'm quoting jobs and invoicing and taking care of, you know, the end of the business day, all my employees are gone, I'm drinking to take the edge off. You know, I thought, you know, my brain doesn't stop. So if I just have a couple beers, I'll chill out. And then I'll meet friends later on for some cocktails. Well, I have this switch that's broken. I don't know how to shut off and just do one. Like if one's good, I'll have three more until I'm driving home drunk. I can tell you, Angela, and again, I'm not proud of it, but I share it. I must have drove drunk at least 3,000 times. And yeah. And the only consequences, big ones, I did get one DWI. And that was back when I was in my early 20s. My father was still alive. Kind of hid that one. They never knew that. And, you know, I'd go home, I'd pass out, black out, whatever, and wake up the next day and do my work. So it was kind of a crazy thing. So I thought, I never looked at the word alcoholism. I thought, well, I just drink a lot and so with my friends. I never, ever realized it was a problem. So fast forward, now I'm 35, finally, and I dated around. I'm doing work for a bar. Actually, I have a few bar accounts. How convenient is that you do advertising for restaurants and bars? And one of my clients had recently gotten divorced. He was my client. And then I found out he was getting divorced, and we ended up started dating. Well, I ended up marrying the bar owner. I had arrived. You know, it was a perfect situation because now I can drink because he owns a bar. And it was a really hip bar in town, very happening place. He drank, so I thought this is it's a perfect match made in heaven. And we have this really fabulous lifestyle, and all our friends are professionals, they're executives, they're business owners, so it's like, can't be that bad. And you know, I'm telling you about the alcoholism. I had been doing drugs all along. My drugs of choice were cocaine and marijuana. You know, I thought if I smoked a little pot, I wouldn't drink as much. Or if I snorted a little cocaine, it would keep me up so you wouldn't know how trashed I was. It's so funny when I think about this now. I mean, it really is funny that like no one knew it was a problem. So every now and then my husband would say, you know, you think you're drinking a little too much? You think you need some help? I'm like, no problem. So I quit. I wouldn't drink for a day or two, you know, and this was nighttime drinking. I wasn't a daytime drinker. I quit for a day or two and think, okay, I'm doing pretty good. Wednesday, it's ladies' night. I'll have a few. And, you know, by Friday, I'm up and running again. Swearing I'm not going to do it. You know, the new week, I'm going to just cut back. So I ended up selling my graphic design studio when I was turning 40. And he sold this the restaurant bar as well. And my husband was 18 years older than me. So he was ready to retire, and I thought, perfect, 40, I'm ready to retire. And we ended up buying a house in Arizona. So I lived in Cleveland, Ohio, and I still do part-time, and we bought a house in Arizona near Scottsdale. And again, on the outside, it's looking great. Two houses, the BMW, the Porsche, you know, the nice clothes, the nice jewelry. But now my husband, who owns this bar, is no longer a business owner, and he's not drinking. And I'm thinking, I started hiding my drinking. Like I would hide how many beers I would have. I'd be in the kitchen cooking. I make him a little martini before dinner, and I'm drinking about a water glass full. And I'm realizing, you know, I'm having to have a couple beers before we go out so I can catch this buzz because he doesn't want to stay out late. And I'm starting to say to myself, this is really weird. I'm hiding my drinking from this guy because he's watching. But again, I'm not thinking the word alcoholism because it can't be. You know, alcoholics live under a bridge. They don't have teeth. Certainly don't have the stuff I have. And every now and then he asks me, he goes, you know, are you just not happy? And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? I guess I wasn't, but I was afraid to say, there's a problem. I thought I can control it. I thought I had enough strength and willpower to control it. So now it's like, we lived in Arizona at 40. So by the time I'm like about 41-ish, I'm thinking a year off. I'm so not ready to like retire. I need to go back to work. And of course I loved exercise. I loved fitness. It kind of was a thing I always did. From the time I was 18, I worked out. So I decided to start going into the business of personal training, and it was perfect. You know, I mean, I went to took some workshops and some classes, and before you know it, I have a few clients. I end up landing a job part time at a country club that we belonged to and lived at in Arizona, and all of a sudden I'm a fitness trainer part time. So that's when it started getting a little bit more insane, because now instead of working out to get rid of my toxins and the night before, now I am, my average day would be like this. It would start out, my partying time would start like this. I would come home from the club that I worked at about 3:30, 4 o'clock. I'd run out to the grocery store telling him I'm buying fresh vegetables or fresh food for dinner. I'd be smoking some pot on the way there, come home, make dinner, have a martini, have a couple beers, make this wonderful dinner. Like I said, I love to cook. Pour some wine. I buy 2 bottles of the same wine to make sure that as we're drinking it, you know, I can throw away that one bottle and continue the other one so he doesn't think that, you know, not changing my alcohol, so he sees it's the same bottle. I am finishing dinner up. He's sitting there watching TV. I'm making a little after dinner cordial, maybe a little Bailey's Irish cream, but I'm throwing an extra shot or two of vodka in mine. And meanwhile, in the running back and forth into my bedroom to do little snorts of cocaine so I can stay awake, because I can't pass out at 9 o'clock at night yet. I've got to kind of stay awake. And then I eventually do pass out. I wake up 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, come to, drink some coffee. I'm not smoking now. Get to the fitness center, teach a spin class, teach a weight training class, work with some clients. You know, by the time it's about 11 or 12, I'm kind of coming out of the fog, ready to start my thing again. By 2, 3 o'clock, coming home from work and doing the thing. I did this for 3 years.
Wow, that's hard to believe.
And, you know, I can't either. And I knew at that point there was a problem. And I always thought, wow, I wonder if I smell like alcohol. I certainly didn't really look bloaty. I mean, I was in good shape. I was short of every now and then getting colds or things like that. I had stomach problems. And I would blame that on just, you know, not eating. I'd never blamed it on alcohol. I always kind of had stomach problems from the time I was a kid, a nervous stomach, if you will. But I never had like any repercussions. Like I was in pretty good health. So finally I had my first meditation class, and I took the class. It was with some of my clients. We had a guest speaker doing the meditation, and I laid there. I had not ever done meditation. Now I'm what, 42-ish, 43. And I take this meditation class, and I get this little voice in my head that says, you have got to stop living this lie. You're living a double life, and you've got to stop it. And I remember after the meditation class, I just broke down crying, and I couldn't tell anybody because, God forbid, they're my clients, and they all think, you know, it's all good on the outside, so I don't want them to know how I'm dying inside with this secret. So within the year, I started seeing a counselor. I'm not telling my husband this. We're having marriage problems. Obviously, my drinking is a problem, but, you know, we're having problems. And I see a counselor, and I'm kind of hiding that from everybody because I thought, I'm just going to do this on my own. I'm going to fix myself. Well, it ended up that I finally decided, okay, she suggested AA, and I'm like, no, I can do this. I'm strong. I've got willpower. So I decided that my plan of action was I'm going to quit drinking. I'm going to leave my husband, and my life is going to be so much better. I'll finally get it together. And pretty much I did that. I quit drinking for a year. I left my husband. We ended up being separated for 2 years. And I would stop drinking for about between maybe a month to 5-6 weeks. And this little voice would be like, okay, I just need to drink. And I would have one night of binge drinking and wake up feeling guilt, remorse, shame, these terrible, terrible feelings. And I'm like, that's it. I'm not drinking. And I wouldn't drink. I would be great for, again, 3 weeks, a month, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. So I did it for about a year. So, and I'm a fitness trainer, right? And things are, you know, the divorce is still pending. So finally, I meet up with a friend, and he says, who I'd partied with and dated all along in my youth. And he's like, do you think you're an alcoholic? And I'm like, what? I'm not an alcoholic. Once I start drinking, I can't stop. That's just the problem. I just can't stop. Well, duh, that is what alcoholism is. But that was the light bulb moment that, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. So like, what do you do? And I had called up AA and I saw it like they had some meetings locally. I'm like, well, you know, I don't know. And I wasn't sure. I just thought, should be able to do this on my own. So finally, I get a phone number of a woman, and it suggested I call her up and talk to her. And we sat on the phone for 3 hours, and we chatted. And she shared her story with me. You know, she was pretty, you know, beautiful gal, had things together, and she told me about her alcoholism. And I'm like, oh my God, I can relate to your thinking and your feeling and your drinking. She's like, Rose, you're an alcoholic. You're an alcoholic. I'm like, oh my God, I am. Now what? I mean, that was really, you know, when I heard another woman tell me that I identified with her. So yeah, so I went to AA. I started going to meetings. And the need to drink had left me rather quickly, the obsession to drinking. And, you know, the program of recovery, the 12-step program, helped me get foundation on how to cope, to take the one day at a time approach. Just for today, you're not going to drink. If a situation would come up that I would not want to deal with, it's like talk to your sponsor, talk to somebody, talk it out, ask for help, which I could never do before. It was like too much protecting my ego, you know, my image or whatever that would be. Like I was afraid to ask for help. Like I should do this on my own. So my new beginning was having some sort of program of recovery, some action steps. And a year into my sobriety, now I'm sober a year, my life is, you know, getting back together. I do finish the divorce with the guy. I'm working as a full-time trainer. I'm continuing with my education. I get certified in spin, Pilates, yoga. I mean, like I teasingly say I'm kind of certifiable because I have some certifications. Definitely certifiable. And it's a year later, Angela, and I'm thinking, I'm sober, right? I'm a fitness trainer, right? Why do I feel like crap? I was bloaty. I was gassy. I felt like my stomach was like, I felt like I was pregnant. I was just so full of the bubbly stuff. I would get sick often. And when I would get sick, it wasn't like a little cold. I would lose my voice. I would be in bed for a week. I mean, I thought, what the hell? I'm not drinking. I'm not drugging. I'm a fitness trainer. Why am I so sick?
So is this when you came up with your 3 steps to recovery?
Right. This is when I found the steps of awareness, willingness and taking action. So I was aware I was sick. I was willing to look at all their alternatives, because Western medicine, unfortunately, you know, the little purple pills, the Melanta, the Alka-Seltzer, all those over-the-counter things weren't making me feel better. So I went to a naturopathic doctor, and she said, you know, what are you willing to do to find out what's going on? And I said, you know, just do anything. Test me for anything. We checked my liver. My liver was fine. She checked out my food sensitivities. I had so many allergies to food, or sensitivities, I should say, to food, that I was shocked. Gluten, dairy, meats, citrus. I mean, things I thought were healthy for me that weren't. And then she also tested me and found out I had a fungus in my digestive tract called Candida.
Would you explain what Candida is for those who listening who may not know?
Absolutely. So Candida, you know, we have good bacteria in our body, which helps us as well as bad bacteria in our guts. So the good bacteria, the flora, helps us in so many ways to assimilate food, to break down food, just like the food enzymes do. So, you know, we have this good bacteria. But then when the good bacteria goes bad or goes rancid, or it becomes actually a fungus. So Candida loves to live on carbohydrates, primarily sugar. Well, after decades of alcohol, drinking alcohol, which I was just talking to someone today who drinks a little too much, and we were talking about sugar. He goes, oh, I don't eat desserts. I go, neither did I. Alcohol is sugar. It's just a liquid form. So so the Candida, you know, if you have Candida, and Angela, you'd be surprised, I mean, you might know this, but basically I think the statistics say now 3 out of 5 people actually struggle with Candida, and it's not being diagnosed by Western medicine. They just don't look at that. And the thing about Candida, I can tell you, is there is no magic pill for it. You don't take an antibiotic. Antibiotics actually wreck the good flora, the good bacteria in your gut. So what happens is you eat a little bit of sugar, and it actually, it's like the Candida just multiply. So the only way, like I found, I learned through my naturopath, was first of all, I had to limit foods that I was sensitive to for at least a year. I had to learn how to rotate food. You know, I get really used to that favorite vegetable or that favorite dinner entree. You know, you kind of get in your habits. You eat the same breakfast every day. So I literally had a sheet 7 days a week. I had to have different foods every day, and I did that for a year, which was fine. I got to experiment with foods I had never even thought of eating. And so we did that for the first year, and thinking that maybe the Candida would get better because of it, but then it still was bothering me. My gut got better, but not entirely. I was not as sick as much, that's for sure. So we went on a serious Candida protocol, which she said, just for 30 days, you're going to completely eliminate sugar, completely eliminate fruit. And there was a big list of things to eliminate. So I looked at, and coffee, and I was still, I'm still a coffee man, but you know, no, and I had already eliminated bread and had already eliminated dairy. So I thought, okay, sugar, and I can do coffee. So let me tell you this. The first day after eliminating sugar, I had never done heroin in my life or any major, major drugs, but I felt like I was coming off of heroin. My head hurt. My body hurt. I mean, I was detoxing. Holy crap. I didn't have major cravings. That was the interesting part. You know, I mean, there was some stuff going on in my head, but not too bad, because like, I was really willing. I really wanted to feel better. And I had eliminated so much stuff over the year. So like, I had learned, you know, what I had a big list of things I could eat. So she said, if you really need have a craving, you know, you could have a little bit of a carrot. You could have a little bit of this. You know, there were some things I could do. And there's so many naturally sweet foods that aren't fruits. When you start really sugar, it's surprising to me how people don't realize that you can get that sweet taste in natural ingredients. So so the long and short of it is, after 30 days, we tested, and I still hadn't killed the bugs. So we went, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, another 30 days, I can do this. I did 30 already. and still didn't have it. 90 days, we hit 90 days, and it was about at the 110-day mark she tested me, and I had killed the bugs. And let me tell you, I had dropped from 122 to about 106 pounds. I was eating like crazy. People would look at me going, do you have an eating disorder? Because I was thinner. And I'm like, no, why? Because I mean, I'm eating five times a day. I'm eating vegetables. I'm eating proteins. I'm eating nuts. I'm eating seeds. I'm eating so clean and I'm working out. I feel great. But, you know, I'm not eating carbohydrates. And obviously, you know, that if you don't know, if people don't know, they carry more water. And that's why these low carb diets are so popular, because when you eliminate carbs, you lose some weight, primarily your water weight.
Roseanne, can you share your tips on how you crushed the sugar cravings?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, here's some great tips. I believe that they're not simple, but they work. First of all, you need to just stop eating the thing you're addicted to. Just stop. It takes about 3 days and, you know, the cravings will go. And learn that food really heals you. You know, eat real food. Learn the importance of the three macronutrients: proteins, healthy fats, and fibers. Cut out the pea foods, the processed foods, the refined grains, the pastries, the pizza, the potato chips. You know, supplement yourself. Check with a naturopathic or a health coach to get the real deal on supplements. Take a prebiotic, a probiotic. Everyone should have a probiotic. I mean, we don't know what we're eating anymore. Make sure you're getting the fiber. And obviously, if you're eating vegetables and some fruits, you're getting great fiber. Trace minerals. Another tip is, you know, exercise smart, but not hard. Like, you don't have to pound your way on a treadmill or run, you know, 10 miles a day at jet speed. It will cause your body to crave more carbohydrates. You know, exercise smart. Take some really good walks. I mean, get on a treadmill or spin class, but don't kill yourself. And incorporate things like yoga or Pilates or bar class, things that are more mind-body, so you can really get connected with your true essence. And also,
so Roseanne, tell us a little bit about detoxing. Why, what, and how you go about detoxing and how it helps you.
Right. So for a detox, the first thing that you want, my three steps were awareness. You know, you have the problem. You know, forget the denial. Be aware you have a problem. And then be willing to ask for help. Get a guru, get someone, get a coach, get a naturopath. Be willing to get some advice, get some help, and take action. Take the action. So reduce the toxic load, reduce your inflammation. I mean, I want to suggest that people, you know, make sure you're drinking lots of water. It's a great detoxifier. Plain water, not the flavored waters, not the, the newfangled waters. Plain old water. Maybe add some essential oils. I think you're an essential oils goddess as well.
Love them.
Love them. Yeah. Lemon oil in your water. Wild orange oil in your water. It helps detoxify. It helps your liver to keep moving that sludge out. And make sure you start out with a breakfast, sugar-free breakfast. Remember, fats, proteins, fiber. Look at labels. I mean, I wrote a book, All Natural Sugar Detox. We can talk a little bit about that, that tells you there's over 100 names for sugar on food labels now that we don't even realize we're eating sugar. And learn what sources of, you know, for naturally sweet foods. And for people that are, you know, having those sugar slips, it's going to happen. We're only human. You're going to go out. You're going to eat a little too much sugar. But just start the next day drinking maybe a tablespoon of organic unfiltered apple cider vinegar to help with your sensitivity, to help lower your blood sugar. And cinnamon oil, one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it actually tastes sweet, and it's not. And it helps to stabilize blood sugar levels. So, you know, eat real food, drink lots of water, exercise moderately, say no, and look at it as a one-day-at-a-time approach. Just for today, you're not going to pick up that pastry. Just for today, you're not going to do dessert. You know, it's not forever, but when you can crush those cravings and learn how to stabilize blood sugar, you realize that it's a pretty sweet world without the processed stuff, without the fake stuff, without the white stuff, that you can enjoy naturally sweetened foods and an abundance of them. No one gets fat eating vegetables. I can tell you that.
Roseanne, tell us about the special offer you have for our listeners, your all-natural sugar detox book.
It's, I'm a best-selling author with that book, by the way. It's called The All-Natural Sugar Detox.
I'll include a link below the podcast for anybody who wants to purchase your book.
So you can get that. It's a super easy book to read. I didn't make it really science nerdy. I've gotten a lot of great feedback that it's helped a lot of people to really identify what's going on. And then also, I have a 3-day sugar detox, and I think maybe you'll put that link also on the website. Absolutely. You can go to Amazon.com and pick up. It's I'm a best-selling author with that book, by the way. It's called The All-Natural Sugar Detox. Just type in my name, the last name, Zaft. Perfect. That's great.
I'll include the link to your free offer as well.
Perfect. And that's a great way. It's 3 days. I give you alternatives on what to eat for 3 days, real food to help you crush those sugar cravings. And it takes about 3 days. And if it doesn't work, you know, again, you know, work with you, work with me, work with someone that knows how to take you through a 10-day sugar-free detox. You'll feel fabulous. I know when I go back to Arizona, I'm going to kind of do a 10-day detox. I just like to do them periodically just to get the junk out of the trunk, try to rebalance things. Fall's approaching. It's a great time. Actually, happy fall. It was yesterday. Fall's a great time to detox because, you know, starting now in Ohio, I don't know about you, sweetest day is like October 17th. We sugar then. Halloween is coming up. Then there's Thanksgiving. All the sugar holidays are here for the next couple months, guys. They're not going away. So prepare now in the month of October for what's coming up. You bet. Thanks so much, and have a great weekend. Bye.
I want to thank you, Roseanne, for joining me today and sharing your story with everyone. It's one of great hope. And anyone who's interested in finding out more about Roseanne and her offerings, please check the links in the podcast notes. Thank you again for joining us. We hope to see you soon here on Nutrition Prescription. This is Angela Atkins of YourHealthUnbound.com.